You can always tweet the show at KWSN Sports, at Craig Matic, M-A-T-T-I-C-K, at John Gaskins 981. Got a tweet from Matt. As far as I know, Matt's been listening to our show for a good 10-plus years. He's a Husker fan and a Gopher fan. Didn't know that was possible, but he lives in Sioux Falls, and you know, he may have been a fan of both teams before the Huskers joined the Big Ten, is my guess. Matt tweets, what are your thoughts on the Fleck extension? Ideally, I would have liked to wait into the Penn State game or even better after the regular season, but I agree with the concept. At least it's the hedges. It hedges Minnesota with the new buyout. And my answer, of course, was listen to the show. I have a radio show. You're asking me my opinion between 3 and 6? Tune in. But anyway, he said he would tune in. So
AD Mark Coyle has come out and says he wants Minnesota to be a destination place for coaches rather than a transitional place, which I can totally understand. A lot of coaches feel that, or ADs feel that way.
He's the boss of the operation, and we can all laugh at that. But P.J. Fleck has made it, I'll put it this way, P.J. Fleck in the last 2.5 years has made Minnesota feel more like a destination, much more like a destination, and it's partly because of him and his persona. The deal is Matt is right. We still don't know exactly how good the Gophers are, and did the Gophers really need to do this? And I guess they probably just felt like there was already tremors coming up from Florida State after they fired Willie Taggart that perhaps, I don't know if they knew or didn't know, but they probably suspected that P.J. Fleck and his agent, probably his agent, had already been contacted by Florida State. He has the feeling of a guy who's on the rise. Craig and I kind of argued about that last hour. Is P.J. Fleck truly a prime candidate for the job? Florida State, USC if they fire Clay Helton, Notre Dame if they fire Brian Kelly.
To me, no.
To me, yes, because perception is reality, even though we don't know if the Gophers are for real yet. And therefore, we don't quite know if at this level P.J. Fleck is for real yet. But I agree with Matt. It was kind of like, why don't you wait and see about Penn State, Iowa, and Wisconsin before a 7-year deal, which means virtually nothing, by the way. He gets a $1 million raise. Good for him. The buyout's $10 million, so this doesn't lock him up by any stretch of the imagination. Let's hear what the opinion is of Matt Zimmer. We depicted you before the break as a mild Gopher fan on the Tires family. Not a diehard, but certainly a guy who, if you root for any major college team, it's Minnesota, right?
I guess, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
I've been following what they've been doing with mild interest because, you know, like you said, the Gophers were the one, Minnesota team I never latched onto. Just because they were never any good, you know, there was never any real reason to. Plus, they were never on TV for a long time growing up. But you know, the Glenn Mason era still is sort of the golden era of Gopher football, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. So there's a pretty low bar, and I think what PJ's done this year is, I mean, we all saw it coming. You looked at the schedule and said they could very easily be 8-0 without actually being that good of a football team, and that's exactly where they are.
They are, and so the next question is, what did you make as? Let's just pretend you're a Gopher fan for the sake of the conversation. On behalf of other Gopher fans, what did you make of them announcing this new 7-year deal and striking a new 7-year deal today?
I think if they really feel like he's their guy, and there's no reason not to think that right now, I think they kind of had to do it because, you know, you made mention of Florida State, USC. Well, what has Florida State done since Bobby Bowden retired? What has USC done since Pete Carroll left? Those programs would absolutely look at a guy like P.J. Fleck. You know, they're not in a position to say, oh, we're not going to hire a coach from the Gophers. I mean, those programs aren't what they used to be anymore. So, and I'll be honest, without, again, having a lot of emotional investment in the Gophers, when I first saw on Twitter, like, oh, P.J. Fleck, Florida State, I did kind of go like, oh, that would suck. You know, he just got there and he's starting to win and already they're talking about him going to Florida State. So, you know, is it a little bit premature? Possibly. Is it a risk? Absolutely, because what if, like we said, they aren't very good right now? They're just beating up on a really easy schedule. And, yeah, they go maybe 10-2 this year and go to a pretty good bowl game. But then, you know, a couple years later, they're right back to being 6-6 every year. Maybe you'll regret that. But I think they almost kind of had to do it if a school like Florida State or whoever else or any other school that's even higher than Minnesota in the pecking order was going to start sniffing around.
It's maybe something you and Craig can relate to at some point in your lives, maybe not, and maybe I can as well, where it's kind of like a dude who has outkicked his coverage in his relationship and feels like I gotta propose. I gotta do it before somebody else goes and gets her. And
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You almost look too desperate. You know what I mean? It kind of has that feel to me, you know? Like, you're not even sure if she's right for you long term, but, you know what I'm saying?
I have a long, long history of outkicking my coverage and then not proposing when I probably should. So maybe.
Okay, forget about analogous to
you. Bad
analogy.
No, I'm saying maybe I should take a page out of the Gophers' playbook.
Yeah.
Maybe they're smarter than me. Is this what it feels like, though? I understand the analogy. I don't think it's terribly wrong. I mean, like I said, they're kind of it's not without risk. I mean, I think PJ Fleck was a good hire at the time.
Yeah, I did.
Because obviously, what he had done at Western Michigan, I think, was very impressive. He was a young guy, an up and comer. I mean, usually. Like, when that first got, you know, when they were talking about P.J. Fleck to Minnesota, I remember thinking, he won't go to Minnesota. He can do better than that. So the fact that they got him at all, I thought, was a good thing. And so far, his tenure has gone pretty well. I think it was a calculated risk. And like I said, now that some other bigger schools are potentially sniffing around, I think they kind of had to do it.
Matt Zimmer, Argus leader, joining us, Sports Talk with Craig and John, joins us every Tuesday. We talk about his beat, which is the South Dakota State Jackrabbits. And when we talk football, two big games coming up over the next 2 weeks. The Jacks at number 4 now in the country. They get two top 12 teams here in the next 2 weeks. Illinois State's number 12, I think, right? Is Illinois State 12?
Yes.
And they'll play them this week. You know, what we saw last week, I saw more of the Wild Jack come up with the offense. Do you think that's going to become more and more of an offensive weapon for South Dakota State with the rookie quarterback in there?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, even before they broke it out this Saturday when I was at practice last week and they had decided they were going to go with Keaton Heidi, I asked John, I said, so that probably means more Wildcat, yeah? And he said, don't tell anybody, but yeah, we're going to run a lot of Wildcat. And so not surprised they would do that. I mean, in part because not even necessarily that they don't trust Keaton Heidi necessarily, or that they think they have to take that much pressure on. But what if Keaton Heidi gets injured? You know, what if Cannon Nelson gets injured? I mean, they only have three quarterbacks in their entire roster. I mean, it would be a freaky thing at this point, but what if they all get hurt and all of a sudden you literally don't have a quarterback on your football team? They kind of have to have something in place there so they can run an offense, you know, but also just with the weapons they have with Pierre Strong and CJ Wilson as running backs and Cade Johnson, they obviously love to run that jet sweep and all that stuff out of there. So Pierre Strong can pass for 100 yards in a game by tossing the ball 6 inches forward. But it's been effective for him.
And that's my big thing with that, with Matt, though. If you have the wild, well, they call it the Wild Jack, not the Wild Cat. That's what Coach Stig likes to say.
Did he come out with that, or is that you?
No, he said that. He says, oh, we call it the Wild Jack.
They used to call it the Flash when I think Zenner was there. And it worked okay with Zach Zenner, not great, but okay. Then they still tried it for a little bit after Zenner was gone, and it didn't work at all. And at some point, the Flash kind of became essentially a naughty word around SDSU because people were so sick of them watching them try it and fail with it. So probably a good decision that they changed the name.
I wonder, though, if this allows the defenses on a very short notice to go ahead and stack the box when they see that Wild Jack being set up. Could that be a defensive help for the teams that they're facing? That'll be one of my questions this week.
I mean, it's certainly possible, probable, because, I mean, obviously when you're in that formation, we're pretty sure they're going to run the football. You know, I don't think Pierre Strong's going to take a five-step drop and chuck it down the field. You have to have at least some threat of, you know, trickery or just not let the defense feel like, okay, we're in this formation, now you know exactly what we're going to do. I think that they're doing that to some degree with those jet sweeps with Cade Johnson. I don't remember them doing that out of the Flash formation when they've had, geez, I don't remember if it was it Kyle Paris that lined up or Brady Mangarelli? I can't remember who. But that was part of the problem was, okay, they're lining up in this Wildcat, this Flash, but there was just not enough unpredictability and it became very easy to defend. I think if they can find a way to do enough different things out of it, it can work. But again, I think a big part of it is just, you know, it's a lot to ask, whether it's Keaton Heidi or Cannon Nelson or Karst Hunter or whoever, that, okay, we're just going to, you know, run the exact same offense with these guys as we did, you know, with Jabari Gibbs or even with Taron Christian, you know, as farther into the season you get and try and expand the playbook. I think they really needed to try to bring something else in there to take some pressure off of all those quarterbacks.
main key is get Johnson and Strong the ball as many times as possible. Offensively.
That's a great way to do it, yeah. Because obviously it's not going to be as easy for a Keaton Heidi or Cannon Nelson to get the ball. It wasn't as easy for Jawari Gibbs to get those guys as it was for Taron Christian. So that's definitely a big part of it.
And the greater picture is, and maybe I asked you this last week or the week before, I don't know, but we're really thinking in terms of national championships here. That's what John Stiegelmeyer wants to win, that he has outwardly stated that's what he's still coaching for, and that has played into the last couple of weeks on our show with talks about what goes into narrowing the budget gap with North Dakota State. But in terms of this team right now, another fine defensive performance. They've kept the other team's scores pretty low all year, even North Dakota State's obviously 16 points until the final 2.5 minutes. How much of a national title contender does this team feel like? And that's with, obviously, this freshman at quarterback.
I think they're still a candidate, in part because, you know, when you look at it, Jawari Gibbs was obviously the best quarterback on their roster, and he was getting better and better every week. But he was still a freshman. How big is the drop-off from one freshman, Jawari Gibbs, to another freshman, Keaton Heidi, who, to be fair to Keaton Heidi, yeah, he wasn't necessarily competing for the starting job right away, but he's a rookie. He's a true freshman. And he was recruited, you know, as a dude. He's not one of these guys that was brought in, you know, as a preferred walk-on, and they said, yeah, you can give us quarterback depth. I mean, they definitely liked him coming in as a guy who they felt like could be a winning Missouri Valley football quarterback. So it kind of depends on just how fast he's able to pick things up, what his learning curve is. I think he's off to a great start. I think he's looked poised. He's looked comfortable. He can throw the football. He gives them a passing element that obviously Cannon Nelson has struggled to give them. So I don't know how huge of a drop-off there is, but the question, again, is how serious of a national championship contender were they with Jawari Gibbs at quarterback? Because that's a lot to ask any freshman, whether you're a true freshman or a redshirt freshman or whatever. And the other thing is just obviously North Dakota State looks like a juggernaut. I mean, who's going to beat them? The Jacks maybe could have, should have, but they didn't, and they're not going to get another shot at them in the regular season. So it's just these next three games are so big for them because you'd like to say, okay, you're a little more patient because of the true freshman playing quarterback or whatever, but they have to win these games.
Yeah.
Because if they don't win all three of them, even if they do win all three of them, there's a chance they'll get sent back to Fargo, and they don't want to have to do that.
Right.
But if they don't have to do that, you look around FCS football, and who's a threat? Who's a serious threat to win the national championship besides North Dakota State? I think we all agree James Madison probably is, mm-hmm. and probably Northern Iowa, who's all the way up to number five now, another Valley team. But outside of that, yeah. It's just hard to see too many teams that you go, okay, that team can beat South Dakota State or North Dakota State. So, again, it might come down to whether or not when or if the Jacks have to go to Fargo as far as whether or not they can compete for a national championship.
Yeah, and they're still in the running for the number two seed. They'd probably have to see James Madison lose to bump up to number two. But they do have quality opportunity wins the next 2 weeks with Illinois State, who comes in at 12. They just lost to Northern Iowa, who you mentioned is five, and those are back-to-back teams visiting SDSU the next couple of weekends. Matt Zimmer covers the Jacks for the Argus, and he's with us on Craig and John here on 98.1 FM, 1230 AM and KWSN.com. When it comes to the defense, relied upon more when you have a freshman quarterback, regardless of that quarterback. What, if anything, is there for fans to worry about on that side of the ball?
What should we worry about on their defense?
What's the weakness that could stop them from holding teams down when they need it?
Well, I mean, injuries could become a part of it. Obviously, they have on the offensive side. But otherwise, they've actually been pretty solid on defense.
That's kind of the point I was making. It appears they are just very rock solid.
They're young in the secondary. I mean, that's I guess, the answer, for just personnel-wise. But it hasn't hurt them because I think, frankly, the guys in their safeties hadn't been starters, but they had played a lot. Those two guys, Josh Manchigaya and Michael Griffin, were ready to step into starting roles. They almost felt like returning starters, even though they weren't. And then you've got at corner, like I said, they're very young, and they have had some injuries there. But those guys are just so talented that they've played really well. I mean, Diamond Evans is a true freshman. He's been really good. Dyshawn Gales is a redshirt freshman who's been pretty good. Now they're going to get Marshawn Harris back here pretty quick, and Don Gardner's been good. So I think the biggest thing, and we talked about this a little bit the week of the North Dakota State game, I don't want to say it's like a no-name defense, so to speak, because obviously Christian Roseboom is kind of one of the superstars of FCS football. But for the most part, the reason they're so good on that side of the ball is they're just so deep. They have such a big rotation, and everybody's pretty good. there aren't any weak links. That's kind of the answer to your question. There may not be all Americans all over the defense, but there certainly aren't any weak links, and there isn't a big drop-off in the depth chart when you go from the ones to the twos, and that's been able to, you know, they can stay fresh, they can, you know, play deep into games, and that's what's made them so good.
Travels well, especially in cold weather. Matt Zimmer joining us. That was our week on Jack's football, and again, Saturday is Illinois State. They will be at Dana J. Dykhouse Stadium, 2 o'clock. Coverage television-wise is on ESPN3, or you can hear it on the Jackrabbit Sports Network starting at 1 o'clock. In Sioux Falls on 107.9 FM, 105.1 FM, and Kello AM 1320. Jackrabbit hoops underway. Zim's caught a couple glimpses of both the men's and women's teams, and also his thoughts on the Vikings' loss in Kansas City, and the Twins deciding to try to lock up Jake Odorizzi for $18 million, and what else they could and should be doing in this important offseason. It's Craig and John, 98.1 FM. 1230 AM and KWSN.com.
Get the latest local sports news, scores, schedules, and columns from John Gaskins by going to KWSN.com. Also hear the station live and Craig and John segments on demand at KWSN.com.
Sports Talk with Craig and John, 98.1 FM, 1230 AM, KWSN.com, and the free KWSN mobile app. We're live from the Midco Sports Network studio in downtown Sioux Falls, 35 minutes away from Andy Greeter, beat writer for the Golden Gophers, the Twin Cities Pioneer Press and TwinCities.com. Big college football story of the day, PJ Fleck signs a seven-year deal, and the notion is the Seminoles were after him after firing Willie Taggart. How much truth is there to that? Why did Minnesota race with three big games coming up? Penn State, Wisconsin, and Iowa. Much better barometers than the first Gopher eight opponents the Gophers played. And we'll get some answers to all those questions with Andy. And we'll get our own thoughts in at the top of the hour. Matt Zimmer gave his about 20 minutes ago. And you can check out the podcast at KWSN.com and we also talked Jackrabbit football with Zimmer for about 10 minutes. We'll get to hoops in a moment. But hey, let's talk music. I'm just guessing you just seem like the Pretenders type, that you'd be a big fan. You'd probably wish you were the right age to date Chrissy Hine. And so were you excited when you hear that the Pretenders and Journey are coming to Sioux Falls? Is that something you're going to go race to find a seat?
I do like the Pretenders. I strongly dislike Journey.
Yeah.
I will not be attending.
So if it's half the bill, you can't do just a half bill.
I mean, if it was half the ticket price, maybe. Or
right.
Yeah.
Right. This, by the way, reminds me of my uncle, and Zim knows my uncle well, in Lincoln. And, yeah. All right. There we go. Had to do it. My uncle and I attended a Santana and Rod Stewart concert together one night. It was a bizarre bill. I would say it's a bizarre billing. Same era, but wouldn't you agree that's a bizarre tandem, Santana and Rod Stewart, that might not have the same fan bases?
Yeah. I mean,
yes.
Early Rod Stewart, you may forget, like back when he was, yes, what was he with? The Faces, I think,
yeah,
was the band he was with. And
yeah.
He used to be kind of a rocker, but yeah. These days he's, yeah, you know, my grandma likes Rod Stewart.
He had Maggie May and stuff like that. And like, there were plenty of grandmas at the Santana concert, but they were cool grandmas. So he went, and Santana opened, and he actually declared to the whole audience, he's like, I can't wait to come back to Lincoln, and next time I'll be the headliner. And the place goes crazy. And then my uncle's kind of like, so he's like, he wouldn't be caught dead at a Rod Stewart show. And but he said the same thing you did. When he first heard of it, I was like, well, you know, maybe we'll stick around. Face, you know, there was the Faces. He might play some stuff from Faces when he was actually, you know, like good and cool. And so anyway, we watched Santana put on a great show. Excellent band, by the way. New arena, so the sound was great. We go out and just hang out, have a couple beers out on like the rooftop of the arena. And we go back in and we could hear Stewart had started. And the second we walk back in, he's playing like Maggie May or something from his early stuff. And my uncle's like, oh, okay, maybe. And so we just kind of got into the into the like area you go into to sit down, and then we just kind of stand there for the rest of that song. I think it was Maggie May. And then all of a sudden, he starts playing "Some Guys Have All the Luck." And the first few beats come on, and my uncle has this look on his face like he is just, you know, he's smelled dead cat. And he's like, "Oh, we got to get out of here. We got to leave." And that was it. So I'm guessing that would be you if Journey started playing after the Pretenders. What are your first?
You're right.
What are your first impressions of the South Dakota State men's and women's basketball teams?
I mean, I was pretty impressed with the men. They were fun to watch. You know, I mean, I don't know how good they're going to be, and I don't know what kind of challenge. You know, I mean, Mount Marty kind of looked like they were just there to have a good time, sort of, and shoot threes and watch on defense. But the Jacks are awful athletic. You know, they probably threw down 20 dunks in that game. And obviously that's not going to happen in Summit League games. But Doug Wilson was really impressive. David Winget was impressive. Some of the young guys look good. They're front court guys who, you know, haven't really got to do anything because they've been playing behind Mike Dom for years, look pretty engaged offensively. So those are all good signs. How's that going to translate to, you know, Division I competition? Certainly some of these power conference teams they have to play in preseason. And then once they get into the Summit League, I don't know. But I don't think there's any way you couldn't come away from that game being pretty impressed and encouraged by what they have. As far as the women, I mean, it's a little different because I think, you know, we just know at this point that they're going to be good no matter what. I mean, Aaron Johnson has a program there that doesn't rebuild, it reloads, and it's not like they're short for talent. I mean, any other year, if you have Maya Selland and Tegan Larson and Riley Cassio-Jensen and some of those other players coming back, you'd be talking about how loaded the Jacks were. It's just that it happens to be a year where both Madison Giebert and Macy Miller, arguably the two best players ever, both leave at the same time. So I think there's this tendency to think, well, how are they going to replace those people? Well, we've seen them do it plenty of times before. And as USD showed today, being down 10 points with 2 minutes left and come back to win, they're loaded. They're going to be really good. I think they're the best team in the league. They're probably going to win the regular season title. But that doesn't mean the Jacks can't be in the NCAA tournament. We saw it last year. Two teams got in. And it doesn't even mean the Jacks can't win it, that they can't pass USD. It's just they're going to have to find a different way to do it because right now they look like the second-best team in the league just personnel-wise. Mm-hmm.
Matt Zimmer joins us from the Argus Leader here on Sports Talk with Craig and John. FM 98.1 AM 1230, KWSN and KWSN.com. Given any more thought to the 103-0 plastering of Spearfish by Pierre in the playoffs last Thursday?
I'm pretty consistent with all these, you know, ugly blowouts that you see where you have people, you know, just so offended and upset and insisting that someone's running up the score. I don't think there is such a thing as running up the score, really. I mean, unless they were, you know, literally leaving their starters in the whole game and, you know, chucking it downfield, which obviously they weren't doing. And I don't like the idea of a mercy rule in 11AA, AAA. But I think absolutely. I think it's long overdue. I made mention of it that night. And Stu went back and found it in the archives. There was a game about 12 years ago where Brent DeBoer was coaching Roosevelt. They were playing a Rapid City team, and the refs just said, "This is stupid. Let's go to a running clock." And both coaches agreed to it, and then they got in trouble. That was really dumb. They should have said, "You know what? That was a good thing of both coaches to agree on. It didn't hurt anyone." I don't know why right there in 2007 or 8, whatever it was, they didn't. Even if they don't want to put in a rule that says you have to have a running clock, why not just say you can do what Brent DeBoer did and say if both coaches agree to it, let's just do it and get out of here, because then there's no arguing, and we don't even have that. And I get the sense that I've had some conversations with some people off the record that are kind of associated with this, that if that had happened again in this game where the two coaches had just said, who cares what the rules are, let's have a running clock, that they wouldn't have gotten in trouble this time. And so I think we're going to be moving towards something, whether it's a mercy rule or a mandatory running clock or just something where coaches can agree to a running clock. I think it's that game just really crystallizes. There's no reason not to have, like I said, even if it's not a hard, fast rule, not to have that at your disposal to try and prevent something like this from ever happening again. Because whether it's 77-0 or 85-0 or 92-0 or 103-0, that just doesn't really serve anyone to have final scores like that.
I've had a coach talk to me who was involved with blowouts a lot when they were in the coaching profession. And when they knew that they were going to be in a game that was going to be a total wipeout, they would work with the officials. And this is how they would do it. When they would run a play, the officials would take their time, let the play end, wait for the players to get up. They'd make sure the down markers were good. Then they look around.
The play clock started.
And then this team then would take that other 40 seconds and bring a play in, and it would be almost a minute on every play. And if there was a guy that ran for a touchdown, they'd throw the flag and say there was holding, and they make it do it over. So he was kind of blaming a little bit. The officials could have done a lot more to prevent the running up the score in that one.
I mean, sure, but I don't like the idea of thinking, like, whose fault is this? Who can we blame for this? That's not really the point. It's what can you do to prevent it from happening again? Because nobody here really acted in bad faith. There wasn't something in place to prevent that. Let's put something in place to make sure it's far less likely that something like this will happen again.
Yeah, well, you got some people who think we have to change the whole classification formula and do everything, change everything over something that had nothing to do with...
That wouldn't have affected this particular game.
That's right.
By the way, what do you feel about the Vikings, and if they can prevent losses like the one on Sunday in Kansas City, however we classify that? Is that just a great game but a tough loss to you, or were you really upset?
No, that one bothered me a lot.
Why?
I mean, because Pat Mahomes wasn't playing. Why do you think? I mean, that's a game you go into the season thinking, okay, that's going to be a really difficult game to win on the road with Pat Mahomes playing. He's out. You have to win that game if you're a Super Bowl team. Matt Moore played fine. I mean, I'm not saying he's terrible, but, I just thought Mike Zimmer really got outcoached. I was really, really disappointed with how poorly the defense played. Kirk Cousins obviously missed some throws, but he still threw three touchdown passes, and I thought the offensive play calling through a lot of the game, especially late, was really questionable. Just a really disappointing game all around. Especially then, you know, everyone in the division lost that day. You had a chance to pick up a game. That was really disappointing, and it, you know, I think it was on the coaching, offensive and defensive side of the ball.
We'll skip the Twins this week. By the way, real quickly, is Wisconsin's brand of basketball something you'd race to go watch since they're in town?
No.
Why not?
Why do you think? They're boring.
Yes, I know.
Yes. You got St. Mary's tonight out at the Pentagon.
Yeah. They're not having problems selling tickets to that one, trust me. Zim, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Matt.
See ya.
At Argus Matt Z on Twitter. We'll discuss that at 5:45, but we'll discuss PJ Fleck's new deal with the Gophers. Did they pull the trigger too soon? It's Craig and John, KWSN Sioux Falls.
Goodbye, everybody.
Hello, we're OMQ Legal, with offices in Denver, Los Angeles, and here locally in Sioux Falls. With decades of experience representing individuals who